Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this special guest episode. And today we're welcoming in Tom Crate. Tom entered into Heroic Husbands Bootcamp Intensive Coaching Program just over 3 months ago. Tom is an award-winning motion designer and director with close to 20 years' experience of designing, animating, filming, and editing stuff. He's also a teacher, coach, speaker, sporadic blog writer, and full-time weirdo. He puts his heart into everything he does, especially the weirdo part. Tom lives just outside Copenhagen with his beautiful queen and son. Tom, brother, it's an honor and privilege to have you on, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, Mark.
Tom, I have to say, like, you sent me on the bio earlier on today, and you had me, like, audibly by myself in my room burst into laughter with the weirdo part. It's like a full-time weirdo. I was actually jealous of that bio. I'm like, I fucking love that. Full-time weirdo.
Yeah, the weirdo thing is something that it came through. And maybe we'll speak about this later, but I had a pretty heavy burnout a few years ago. And I think a part of that was a real sort of learning process for me. And a big part of that process was kind of learning to, I guess, accept the or appreciate, I guess, the parts of me that I previously kind of disowned or you know, thought were weird. Because I mean, I realized that doing creative work, it's kind of a necessity. And I think it's also kind of, I mean, it's a necessity in many parts of life to be weird in some way, right? And but there's this weird sort of, I guess, dichotomy in life and society where weirdness is considered like freaky and scary or not something we don't want to have around. But at the same time, weirdness is also innovation. It's also pretty much everything that's new is also weird in some way or another. So I kind of like the idea of, you know, just kind of owning that weirdness. And I thought I'd at some point, I've been through many iterations of that bio, and at some point it's like, yeah, fuck it, let's just put the weirdo part in, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna rob that, make a t-shirt out of it, like full-time weirdo. Like, totally. I will quote you, come on, I'm a content creator. I'll quote Tom Crate. But it really speaks to very much the heart essence of this work. And you know, I've said it with you, I say with all the guys that come in and on the podcast, is like, of course, you know, podcast title, you know, a lot of guys find men's work. I found men's work. Hey, marriage breakdown, breakthrough, got to save my marriage. You know, it's for so many guys, and I'm 5 years in men's work. So many guys report it. It's like, oh, I found men's work when my long-term girlfriend left me, when my marriage broke down. There's a broken heart. Yet the relationship breakdown or the inability to be in a relationship, like, that's the secondary. Like, the primary is that there's a weirdo part in you. There's a weirdo part in me. And that's why I'm excited here about this conversation. Why I brought it up is like, there's a weirdo part in every guy listening in. That's like our authentic truth. That's our soul. That's our heart. That's the artist in us. That's the musician. That's the point, you know, like, we can speak to it in so many ways. That's the work. Coming to be okay with that. It's weird. It's meant to be weird. Definitely in this society where we're homogenized into same shit, different day, you know, go to school, go to college, get qualified, get a job, work at the job, save money, wife, kids, and just repeat the exact same cycle. So beyond the beautiful moment a couple of years ago where you found that spark inside and said, hey, screw this, full-time weirdo, I'm going to start reconnecting with this and owning it. Clearly there was a lead up to that moment. When you look back, Tom, at your childhood growing up, you know, your environment, the experiences you went through with, and I always want to make this safe en masse for parents, your parents, my parents, and all parents, you know, parents of guys listening in, none of this is to blame. It's just to get black box style thinking. It's like, hey, you had a human experience. So in your human experience growing up, what were some of the experiences and the dominoes you knocked over, Tom, that sort of knocked that weirdo part out of you that made you or a part of you feel, hey, I'm actually unsafe to bring my quirky, unique voice, way of expressing myself into the world, and slowly but surely shut that off. What were those human experiences?
I mean, there's probably a few that I could point to. I mean, one, I guess the obvious one, which is something that I've I guess reflected on quite a lot, through doing the work, is my dad when I was younger had a pretty explosive temper. He was like a really loving, like playful dad. Like I loved him. And he was always able to express that love to me as well. But he was unpredictable from especially from a child's point of view. That was kind of my memory, was that it was never, I could never fully predict when, what might set him off. And it was, it could be pretty terrifying as well when he's sort of is almost like the valve kind of went, and all the stuff that he had pent up inside just kind of leaked out. So I think from that experience, there was definitely some kind of a sort of apprehension, I suppose, about just having experiences where I was in full playful, child mode, just like laughing and giggling or doing something, maybe doing something, a little, kids can get a little bit silly, right? You get a little bit hyped and maybe something, knock over a glass of water or something like that. And then suddenly, boom, suddenly the shift from this kind of completely sort of innocent, playful nature to instant like freeze response, like terror, like just, take me away from this place. Like I don't, I my the you know my father, the figure of masculinity in my life, who I love very much, in this moment is basically targeting all of this pent up rage at me. And that's not, I'm I, and I have absolutely no resentment towards him for that whatsoever. Like I completely understand where all that came from, and it was completely un unconscious on his part. But I think that was, probably a pretty key part of it. And then I think continuing on from that, I had a lot of experience in school where I was a very shy kid, a little bit of a nerdy kid, and definitely not one of the cool kids. And again, I think I sort of learned to be invisible, I guess, as a sort of safety mechanism. So in that sense, it wasn't safe for me to, because if I was it, when you're in full expression, you're also at your most vulnerable. And I think there was a lot of, especially in, when I think back to my sort of school years, between sort of, especially between sort of 8 and sort of mid-teens, it didn't feel like a safe environment at all to really be myself, unless I was with my, close friends who I trusted.
It's so key to the school environment. I share it here, and I believe with you as well. We unschool our girls, and it's actually quite remarkable to witness. I was just having a conversation with Matilda the other day, and she was noting that her sister's boy is going to school. And I just want to keep it safe. I have a definite, I won't argue, I won't hide. I have a real high bias for unschooling being a really beautiful way. And I would back it up with science, etc., etc. But I do want to make it safe for guys listening in. It very often might not be available within certain lifestyle choices, so I want to keep it safe. Every person is doing their 10 out of 10 best, and that's an absolute human truth. However, one of the hidden things is, what she was noting was, it's like, oh yeah, Elena, her sister, like her son, he was on the phone with Matilda the other day and on Zoom, and she was like, oh, he has all this like gel and spiky stuff in the hair, and he's quite young, he's like by 6. And she's like, yeah, it's funny, Mark. You look in the homeschool group. I mean, they're in early teenage years when they start getting, self-conscious of image. Up until then, predominantly, it's like they don't give a fuck because there isn't that battleground of comparison. And it really, really affects. I know myself why I could talk, my marriage issues, not just in school, it was like childhood, like family of origin as well. But I was going around with such a level of anxiety. I did the opposite of you. I learned to stand out. I actually am I'm a recovering introvert who learned extroversion in a society where, okay, that helps you fit in, but I'm more naturally sort of that introverted. I just want to be quiet. Deep conversation. I'm with Tom now. I love conversation with Tom. I'm with Tom. This is going to be really meaningful. Get me into a space where Tom is there with a ton of other people and I can't actually sit with you. I don't like that space. I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to be there. And I look back at school, a lot of foundational experiences. Does that sort of self-conscious part strike a chord with you, Tom, and in what way?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel it was a very, I mean, looking back at, I think, I would say pretty much all the kids, there was a lot of self-consciousness, just, I mean, in the UK, all the kids wear school uniform. So, which in some sense, I mean, I used to hate that. In some sense, I think maybe it was a blessing in the sense that it kind of allowed everyone to blend in to a certain extent. But even in terms of like, haircuts and stuff, like, I actually don't know why I had the guts to do it, but I was maybe there was a kid of it was a school of over like 1,000 kids, and I think I grew my hair out, so I had long hair around the age of 14 or something, and I think there was only maybe like two other boys in the whole school that had long hair. It's almost all the kid it was like short hair. If you had anything more than like an inch of hair, and you were a target immediately. And just looking back on it now, it feels like, wow, I mean, that's intense, like for anyone to be in that environment, let alone a child that's developing. And I think all the, it's, and it sort of breeds more of that sort of judgment, right? Because everyone's kind of looking over their shoulder. Am I wearing the right clothes? Do I have the right haircut? And I mean, I imagine now with social media and all that stuff that wasn't around when I was a kid. I mean, I can imagine that can add an excellent, another level to that as well. So, I don't know how kids cope with that these days, to be honest. I mean, it's a rough world for a
In many senses, like looking at the science of it, they're not coping. Of course, you can cope. We get along. We all cope. The nervous system, when you look at it, like the stats on suicide, the stats on pronounced clinical narcissism that's coming through, it's like pretty catastrophic. I won't go into a full-on rant about the healthcare system worldwide and the lack of heart-centered leadership, blah 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 blah, but it's there and it wants to come true. They're not really taking the level of profound dysfunction that is being created by technology sincere at all. It's a deep conversation. I do bring it forward because guys, plenty of parents listening in, and we have to be very vigilant in practicing that awareness and not trying to sugarcoat it, like, oh, it's fine, it's normal. It isn't normal, or it is normal, it's not natural. And if it's not natural, it ain't good. Or Tom, go looking back what you were saying, like that terror and apprehension, that sort of background awareness that, living at home with your dad, that not having that certainty. And I know Tony Robbins speaks to that, like certainty is the first human need. All the other needs come after that, but it's that foundational, I need to have certainty that I'm safe, that, in my developmental years, I can trust. And you didn't have that certainty. What was the long-term impact of that apprehension that would have been there for those years growing up as a boy? When you look back, like, what ripple effect did that have as you grew into, a teenager, young man and yeah, indeed into going into marriage.
I think, I mean, it's hard to sort of pinpoint, the exact sort of effects, what was caused by that or other things. But, growing, as I mentioned, I was very shy. And especially as a teenager, I had very low self-esteem. I was very, I guess I shamed myself, for being shy. Like I desperately wanted to connect. There was, I guess there was a feeling of, inside me, there was an extrovert wanting to get out, but it was sort of trapped in the shell. So kind of desperately wanting to sort of connect more and to just express myself, but really feeling unable to. And I think that's something I still have to this day, this feeling of, I mean, I've made a lot of progress in terms of my ability to express myself, but there's still certain situations where, on a fairly regular basis, I would say where I still have that same, so it can be as extreme as a freeze response, but sometimes it's just that, something a little bit more subtle than that, but really just the kind of inability to speak, or just a real sense of discomfort in certain social situations. So yeah, there's there is still that residue. I'm still working with that. I'm still working with some of these judgments that I have around that, especially, as an adult as well, it's sort of a judgment that, like, well, now I'm grown up, I should be over this shit, like I should be able to talk to whoever I want. I shouldn't be that shy. So I'm still, I guess, in a way, I'm still judging that, that sort of scared little boy who's kind of is always trying to monitor the situation to see if it's safe enough to speak, and then what trying to analyze what should I say? Should I say the right thing? So yeah, it in social situations in particular, it can lead to a lot of that sort of paralysis and analysis but not paralysis. I mean, I could also speak about part of this process for me also, going back to the weirdo part, is also about acknowledging some of the positive aspects as well, in the sense that I feel like my career getting into design and animation, maybe I wouldn't be doing that stuff if it wasn't for the fact that I felt kind of unable to express myself verbally, that I had to find another way to do that. So I, doing that through design and animation. But yeah, I think I'm still on a path there to, like, open myself up and express myself better and that kind of thing, and accept myself as well for the times when I can't do that.
Where excuse me, there when you said that part of your voice, that voice of shame, oh, I should be, or I should have this done. I know myself, I've in the last 2 months I've started doing daily morning tantric breathwork. I've shared with the guys on the podcast here quite often. My sexual trauma is quite pronounced long term, and I have been coming aware of it, like in quite a number of years, going, hey, I can practice equanimity about that, I'm good. But it's more subtle now, I know myself, where the I should is still there. I noticed I was speaking with Matilda the other day, going, yeah, I started doing the breathwork, Tom, and it was pretty fucking awesome, actually, because my cock not working at key moments. I don't have to explain to you guys, what moments I'm talking about. It's like, yeah, come on, superhero, do your fucking job. It's time for Batman to rise, type moments. I've had loads of breakthroughs over the last number of years, but it was still there in the background. So I got to work, and within a week of starting it, it was like, who fucking yeah, like praise the Lord. It was like in the bed, roasting hot, roasting hot. But the funny thing is, Tom, it's like I think it's like my boy bitch energy. That inner child was like, yeah, like score line, I'm already Olympic champion. I'm the Usain Bolt of the situation, fucking hero. That level of arrogance that was like, proclaiming self-mastery long before I'm even anywhere near it. I had maybe 2.5 weeks where it was like sensational in the sack. I was fucking like King. I was like knocking out of the park. And then boom, it hit me. And it was like, it's like I never knew what an erection was. It's just it left me. But my reflections the other day was on that. It was like, oh, I should be. There was like my inner child was like, you should just have this fucking shit sorted. You should be able to do 2 weeks of tantric breath work and just have like the cock of a porn star forevermore. What the fuck is it that you have to have this humility to repeatedly go and pay the price of self-mastery? So I just wanted to share that. It really struck a chord in me just literally the other day. That insight, it's still there. I suppose that's the price that we have to pay, is it's self-mastery. Like that is there in you. It is there in me. Every guy listening in, you know, Heroic Husbands, Tom, you like did incredible work over 10 weeks. Like it's there. Part of the work is to just be fine that that bit is there as you drive the vehicle of your mind, of your heart and your soul, and have fun living happily ever after as you hold space for that. Now, how has that process been for you, Tom, in finding a loving space of acceptance for this part or these parts of you that they're not going away? They do try to, you know, fuck up your happiness spontaneously a moment and give you a freeze response, or, you know, they try to take over the steering wheel of your mind in moments when you want heart, you want to feel love and connection, but that's the last thing that they want to do. What has that process been like for you to welcome these parts in and integrate them?
Well, definitely still a work in progress, like you say. I mean, I think, you know, one of the, I guess when I came to you, around just before Christmas, and I was really sort of, it was, I guess it was a, you could describe it as a bit of an existential crisis, really. Like I was in the space where I just felt like I was failing at everything. Like I was doing a full-time job, and father to a young son, and husband to a beautiful wife, and feeling like I wasn't really making the grade in any of those. Like I felt like I wasn't spending enough time with my son, but also didn't have enough time to do my job properly, and then also wasn't present, you know, with my wife. And that whole, you know, since we started working together, you know, there's been a whole shift for me. Like it's really kind of broken everything apart, and really the key to that was, I guess, at some point, I guess I don't know if you recall, there was one of the sessions where I essentially had was having a breakdown, and you know, the breakthrough always follows the breakdown, right? And it was a reconnection with my heart. Like I'd been, I guess I was trapped in all of these shoulds, you know, shoulds about, you know, I should be working, I should be able to do a full-time job and raise my son because that's what everyone else does, you know, just looking at the sort of surface level of things, and judging myself. And what I realized was that I, with all of this judgment and all of this kind of sort of struggling, I was sort of papering over what my heart was just screaming out to me, like, you know, this isn't working. Like you have to make a choice. And as soon as it came down to what's the choice, I'm choosing, it's a no-brainer. I'm choosing do I want to choose my job over my son or my family? It's like, of course not. Like, you know, family is far more important than that. So as soon as that happened, that was a big, you know, it was a massive shift, and it was kind of like a, you know, the recalibration. All of a sudden, it was like, okay, wow, I remember what's important now. And that I think with that came a lot of acceptance, I suppose, or sort of realizing where I'd been being hard on myself, and also seeing where that was also being sort of reflected onto my son as well, you know, like regardless of how much I was consciously trying to be the good parent and, you know, ne never losing my temper or anything like that, but just energetically, you know, I was carrying around this stress with me every day. And so I think it was just all this awareness that I was carrying this stuff and just being like, okay, I can actually I mean, I'm still figuring out the practicalities of it. Like, but the immediate thing is, okay, right now my son needs me, and I need to stop working for a bit and just figure things out. And that's where I'm at currently. But yeah, I think that, that sort of reconnection and then has allowed me to reconnect with him and really see him and see where he's at. And just for some context, I know you know Mark, but for people listening, my son is two and a, just over 2.5 years old, and he's highly sensitive. So it's something that we've kind of gradually come to understand over time, and so he has a very hard time with loud noises, with like larger groups, like with being in a room with other kids crying, or just generally new environments can be quite overwhelming for him. So we realized that the situation wasn't working with him in daycare, and that he needed more space. He needed, more attention from me. And then there's that, again, I guess the whole process reflected the sort of internal process of me judging myself. I've also been seeing how I've been doing the same him, kind of until we kind of made this sort of cognitive, or I guess a sort of I guess we got a sort of definition, sort of psychological definition of that this is a natural thing. It's about 20% of the population have this sort of, it's sort of a genetic thing. It's not a diagnosis, it's just a genetic thing that 20% of the population are highly sensitive and they struggle in certain areas. And seeing him struggle in public spaces with struggling with socializing with other kids was like reflecting straight, is going straight back into my own sort of self-judgment around how I am, and I guess on subconsciously I was trying to sort of fix him, maybe trying to push him when all he when actually he really needed just to be given patience and to be held. And maybe I was trying to sort of like, I must be doing something wrong as a parent. Like maybe we're being too easy on him. We need to like push him more. And the more we pushed him, the more he would kind of go into himself and struggle. So, that side of it, that sort of, that mirror of my son is like, that's opening up a whole new level of, I guess, realizing where I'm judging myself and where I've kind of subconsciously been judging, I guess, I mean, judging his behavior at least, putting a label on it when really, it's perfectly fine. He's expressing exactly, the only thing that he could ever possibly do. As we all are, I guess, once you start to get into that and you see that, we're all just expressing what we came here with, what we were given, and there is no like there's nothing to shame in that from that perspective.
It's such a beautiful conversation to have between men. That part, and I know myself as well. It's like, oh my fucking God, when you're saying that, projected judgments, and I remember that with our eldest daughter particularly. She just lived in for more years with my unconsciously fucked up complete trauma, lack of informed reality. Very much when you were describing your dad, I was like, oh my God, that's me. Okay, cool. This is just practicing humility, going, yeah, Tom just described his childhood experience and my nervous system. I didn't interrupt you at the time, but it was okay. He's describing Anya's words. But my projected judgments of, anytime she would freeze in front of me, or she'd just go into that bubble, she'd dissociate. Oh, in the beginning, when I was not trauma informed and I didn't understand, it was infuriating. And it was that voice, you should, I sort of like, she's showing me up. She's showing my failings up. Like, so would you stop fucking doing that? Would you just behave? Would you just speak? But of course, coming from there, no softness, no safety. So it just exacerbated it. But I love that softness. You know, you asked me earlier on, so do I remember? I do remember that session. There was like when it was night and day. You know, that inner knowing, that incredible softness that's there with you now in your voice, and it's so soothing to be in a space with you there. That inner knowing, you said it there. It's like, you know, when you come from the heart, it's so simple, really. I that's the one thing. It's probably the essence of my work, is this is not actually very complex. And I know you're embodying that now, so you get it, but by extension to guys is to invite them into that space. Beliefs for me is like what we were indoctrinated with. You know, you would work, myself would work, every fucking guy would work, you know, work, provide, be the man, be rich, climb the ladder, you're successful. Yeah, but what about home? Doesn't matter home. Women are indoctrinated into that. So it's like we have this battle and conflict between beliefs that harden us. And we will, until we wake up, we will do anything to reaffirm the beliefs as being true and valid. No matter how much your body is screaming at us, as you say, your heart was screaming at you. But then you drop into the heart and you're like, oh, my body, my heart is telling me all the time perfectly what to do. My curiosity, Tom, is, you mentioned the shift within your parenting, how that inner knowing, that shift from sort of like a hard conceptual belief-oriented reality to, hey, soft inner knowing, heart, soul, I'm just seeing things clearly. What was the before and after with your queen? How you were able or unable, challenged in showing up in deep, intimate relating with your queen? Energetically, and yeah, what has that shift brought and gifted your capacity as a man to relate with her?
I think, and again, I should caveat was, still very much a work in progress.
If
I
you're
think,
caveating, you're caveating
I
for both
mean,
of us.
it's still, yeah, it still feels like I'm still just uncovering just, very tip of the iceberg. But when I do, it's even just that little tip is like pretty amazing. And I think, I guess I could sort of summarize it by saying like the most profound thing for me is sort of this realization that, and this is something that you taught me, and I think it took a while to sort of sink in and for me to even just sort of try it, as just the fact that I can actually express what I'm feeling in the moment. And that's actually what she wants, that a lot of the time the thing that is sort of below the surface is putting her nervous system like on complete edge, is the fact that I've got stuff going on, but I'm not saying what it is. So I'm just pretending that I'm fine. The classic one, are you okay? Yeah. When underneath you got like a million things that you want to say. And obviously there's a difference between just, spilling out all of the truth, as you call it, like the without owning it. So it's that that own curious truth, those three words that you taught me, like is like immensely powerful. And that just owning my feelings in the moment, having to, there's a whole years and years of conditioning that immediately puts me, as soon as I'm feeling like my nervous system is on edge, immediately there's some kind of a defense mechanism or a story that wants to either attack or withdraw. And being able to sort of override that and just own just the actual truth of the moment, which is what I'm feeling in my body. Like, maybe she'll say something or something that happens that triggers me, and instead of going into the story, just actually expressing the fact that I feel sad right now, and it takes a moment to feel into the, so there's a whole, it feels like, it feels like this thing is like a, it's like a whole martial art that you could spend, like decades to get to black belt. And I feel like I've maybe just got my wipe, just being allowed to enter the dojo because I've just sort of, discovered that this is actually a thing that you can do. You can actually say how you're feeling. And guess what? Sometimes it actually completely diffuses the situation, you know, because suddenly she knows what you're feeling. And there is, and it kind of just all of the stories and stuff, they don't need to be there anymore. Yeah, I guess I went on a bit of a
No, it's beautiful.
tangent there. I
It's
hope that was answering the question.
an uncommon conversation. Well, it's common in this culture, but it's an uncommon conversation in this culture for men to speak like that. With the understanding you have, Tom, you know, if looking back and definitely with one-on-one work, I speak to it here and in Heroic Husbands men circles, you know, the link of trauma. Again, no blaming the past, no blaming mom, dad, whatever the fuck. Like, wait, there is this Kobe Brown moment. You just have to get the fuck over yourself and get on with it. But from that black box style thinking of being trauma informed, what was your thinking pre coming to this work? Pre, you know, what was the underlying assumptions your nervous system was making? That was sort of whispering in your ear, going, don't ever speak to your emotion. Because that's all pervasive. I don't know of one guy that has not reported that. You know, guys listening in, if you're there going, oh, for fuck's sake, these pussies talking about, you know, like old side, you can. I'm quite sure they're the ones that just like dip their toes in and they rebound off. But the guys that are listening in, every guy, it's universal. I'm not allowed to speak to my emotions. Take us into your inner world. What, like, when you look at it now, or the subconscious beliefs that were, you know, really deep down going, don't ever talk about your emotions, Tom. Don't fucking do it. What were those beliefs telling you?
I mean, I think it's one of those things. It's so pretty deep in the subconscious to the point where it's actually it takes I'm really having to think about like what were those actual beliefs. But you know, I think it's something around. I think I pretty deeply believed in my body that you know if I really shared my emotions that it would I don't even know if I knew what the outcome would be. I just felt like it was gonna be bad, whatever it is. Like either she's gonna get scared or she's gonna get pissed off, or but if I'm more now I'm reflecting on it, I feel like I think maybe it comes back to, you know, if I really share what I'm feeling, then I'm really fucking vulnerable, right? And then, you know, if I'm that open. And she can just like, you know, put the killer blow, you know what I mean? Which is, and it's a very, you know, trying to putting it into words now, it seems like a really strange thing of, you know, like almost putting it in terms of a sort of a battle or, you know, like, but it really feels like that, like there's some sort of danger deeply in the nervous system. Like, you know, don't show what you're really thinking because somehow that gives your again, it's thinking of your partner as some kind of adversary, but it feels like that. Like, you know, I think on some level, that's there is some kind of a belief or a story there around the relationship, maybe all relationships that I've been in, that this in some ways it's almost like a battle.
Yeah, it's beautiful language. The battle. Again, just knowing, speaking with so many guys, the adversary, the downright enemy that she is. I like I say about my queen, is like I just kept recreating her into a monster for years. And maybe I've asked you a question that I haven't fully formally answered myself. I was cruelly putting you in the spot. I don't like those exact beliefs myself. I do know, like in my experience, Tom, when I look back, when I started coming to that awareness, it was like, fuck, I'm petrified. I'm fucking like grade A petrified. I freeze, like those similar words. And I'd hide behind that. You're an enemy. Look at what you're doing to me, making me feel that. But when I really softened into it, it was like, fuck. You know, and I don't have conscious memory of a lot of it, but I just know in general, I learned to just not share my emotions growing up. And I do know, like, I had such an amount of grief, you know, with Matilda saying, and it still does come true, you know, if like whatever, certain period of time, whatever, I don't have my ducks in a row, it does happen. It's hard shit that comes through me. It's actually horrific what my mind can do as a result of, like, as you say, that vulnerable. There's that space where it's like I want to, but fuck, that, like, that leaves me that I can be killed on the spot. I'm that soft. What has to take us into you started practicing that. So clearly you were, have become aware and accepted that there's that fear, that hesitation, that sort of background terror of, God, I'm feeling sad, but what the hell is going to happen to me if I share it? But you practiced, you didn't have the confidence, you practiced having the courage. I'm just going to say it anyway. Trust the process. Take us into the details of how that was received and try, like, as detailed as possible. I'm just over communicating with you because this is the crux. You know, this is why most guys wouldn't don't go to therapy, don't go to counseling, why so many guys are listening in going, yeah, heroic husbands, men's, I were, you know, it sounds like a really cool idea. I'd love to, but they don't actually want, because this crux of I be emotions. No fucking way. What has been your firsthand experience of taking the leap of faith and doing it?
I think the big sort of shift that happens, like what I'm noticing, is that it's just kind of it sort of immediately, or it doesn't necessarily like completely dissolve the stories, but there's something about just speaking my actual feelings in the moment. It's sort of bringing me into my body, so it's instantly kind of redirecting my energy from all of these stories, you know, which could just, I could spend, you know, hours, days, weeks, you know, just in that head, in those stories. And it's something about just dropping into the body, and suddenly, you know, because oftentimes it is it's something like sadness, and it's this thing, it's like, you know, I don't actually allow myself to feel this very often. It's like, and so there's a whole, it takes me in a whole different direction. It was like, holy shit, you know, this is a, it's an emotion that I've really clearly been suppressing for a long time. So there's that part of it, just being grounded in the body. And I feel like it's almost like a sort of synchronous thing that happens, like without having really sort of gone into detail with my queen about what she's going through. But I kind of sense it's the same on her side. Like, as soon as I sort of drop in and speak to that, no matter how sort of awkwardly I do it or whatever, but just, I think it's just energetically as well as speaking it, that it also kind of, because she's, you know, if I have a story, then she also has a story, right? Like, it's, and usually it's just those two stories that are battling it out. And I think just energetically, the same shift, or it sort of allows that shift to happen as well, where it's like suddenly she's feeling what I'm feeling, or, you know, she's at least getting an insight. And it kind of, I think it's almost impossible to hold on to those stories as and feel empathy at the same time, you know, because it's sort of the opposite of empathy. When you're in story, you're just, you know, you're just kind of making up reasons to be angry with someone, or, and empathy is sort of is a bodily feeling, as far as I understand it. And so it just kind of, it, you know, it I mean, it can be, it isn't always just like a magic thing, but I feel like it can be sometimes, you know, just sort of breaks this sort of almost like this illusion, like daydreams, pops the bubble, brings us both back into our body. Sometimes there's a, you know, there's maybe there's more, there's still some of this sort of energy that needs to be worked out. But I often find that, you know, maybe a little bit later in the day or something like that, then we're able to actually connect. And I think opens up the space for her then to say, to also own, you know, if there was some story that she had going on, maybe she'll share that and say, well, I, you know, I was this triggered this part of me, and it's because I was feeling this, I was feeling afraid or whatever. And that whole, just from that one sort of, it's almost like a, sort of crossroads, right? You take that different route, and suddenly it allows this whole, just a whole new space for like understanding and connection to happen. And like I say, that's, it hasn't happened a lot yet, but I'm seeing it, and I can see how powerful it is. And it's really just me working against all of these years of conditioning to, like, in the moment, try to retrain myself to, like, wait, stop, feel your feelings, express them.
And it is that terrifying. It's like it's this abyss. Joseph Campbell quoted some Native American tribe. It's like, oh, what? It's like when you meet a chasm in life, take a leap. It's more like a crack in the sidewalk than like the Grand Canyon. I'm totally butchering the quote, but it's like, it seems our trauma response in the nervous system goes, you're fucking gonna die, you're gonna die. And then you just like, I just said it was sad and it transformed everything. What was all the fanfare about? I'll never know, but I do get that. That was a revelation for me. Rational mind, everything, trauma, just going, don't fucking do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And then when I did it, particularly in sadness, I remember in my men's coach training, I just really I connected with that sadness. Like you were saying, it's like, wow, if a lot of this around, and I shared it over a week, several times. Oh, baby, I'm just, when I now say cleaning my plate, it was like, hey, baby, I'm feeling I'm in a bit of a fog of sadness. Don't take it personal. I'm sitting with it. And at the end of the week, Tom, she turned to me. She's like, Mark, I know you by 13 years. Never once have you said that you were sad. I was like, wow. And the penny dropped. And I for a good number of years, like 12 years, ultimately, with my queen, not clinically depressed, albeit I'm quite sure there's a lot of people out there, if you sit in front of them, they'd be trigger happy to tick a couple of boxes and give you a label. She never went and got support, but sort of she depressed many times, like highs and then lows, but the lows were long, and I did not know how to be there. And yeah, nice guy, holding space, doing whatever, but fuck, I did, like, it was inconvenient. My nervous system didn't have the tools. I know since that one shift in me, Tom, me just going, hey, I'm sad, it's okay. Quite pronounced. I'm okay. Just breathing through, just letting myself have that human experience. I've been able to hold space for my queen so much more. Do you know, like, she doesn't get depressed anymore. Or like what I call like those in she'll have a deep sadness, but it's like, yeah, baby, here. I'm here. You're fine. It's, I don't know, it's like it feels like it's 2% of the intensity of what it would be. 2% of the duration. Have you been feeling that sort of almost like mystical power of when you allow yourself to have that human experience that can really distinctly transform the mood that your queen is in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I again, like, I would say that I'm I would say I'm at the stage where I'm just sort of uncovering it as much as, like, I've had glimpses of it, as opposed to sort of really experiencing that deeply, apart from it, in moments. But, I can see it's really shedding a lot of light on, like you say about that you weren't aware of her sadness, and that just you touching into yours, kind of somehow freed her in a way. I can still see how there's a lot of, I think both my wife and I have anger, sort of, and I feel that that's, you know, that's one of the areas where, I mean, it's very rarely is it actually expressed, maybe a little passive aggression or anything. It's not, you know, it's I'm a lifetime sort of anger suppressor. But a lot of these stories, you know, there's a lot of anger in there, and it's when you know, from some of these experiences that I mentioned, where suddenly you kind of tap into the feeling, and you know, maybe the sadness underneath the anger's covering up, and then getting to hear her side of it, you know, and that she's also maybe feeling sad or angry or scared, or you know, maybe she's scared, and then her, you know, it's her anger that's sort of protecting that fear, and just seeing how those, you know, you know, the sort of polarity of it, right? Like the more I'm coming with this anger, the more anger she. So it always seems to be whatever it is that I'm feeling or projecting out onto her is like when I speak to her afterwards, is like she's having the exact sort of inverse of that. So I can really see how, yeah, like being able to drop that, get into the body. Is just opening up so much space, so much of this sort of energetic sort of yeah, like sort of for, you know, force against force that just isn't necessary, that can just kind of dissipate. And yeah, even just you asking that question has already got me thinking, you know, like thinking like, well, where else, you know, am I you know, in a way, almost sort of putting her into a box, you know, through my own sort of narrow stories of, you know, anger, resentment, or whatever. Each one of those is kind of holding her energetically into, you know, having some sort of inverse, you know, story and energy, you know, directed back at me as a sort of unconscious defense, I suppose. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm just kind of, it's just sort
No,
of coming.
it's that intuitive knowing. I love that when you flow with there. It makes perfect sense. It actually lines up with first-hand experience with my queen and in myself. It was a really powerful teaching for me when I learned. It's like I think it was my mentor in men's work, initial mentor. He said it to the group. It's like, hey, underneath anger, there's always sadness or grief. It's like the anger is there because, you know, individually or like collectively, we fear the soft underbelly of, hey, I have grief, I have tears. This is like exceptionally vulnerable. So it's like, of course, there's anger there. I remember going, wow. But then also, oh, fuck. I'm angry all the time. It's like, fuck. I don't have sadness there. And probably timeline, like in this conversation, you know, that sadness came to the surface, you know, gave that permission. But yeah, that anger. With the sadness, grief underneath, I know for my rational mind, it's like, oh God, that makes sense. Cool. So whenever I'm angry, it's nothing personal with my queen. It's like I'm trying to hide, and I say, okay, cool. Well, there's sadness, grief. What's that about? And I know that's where my like your process of once you got to, oh, you know, the anger, you could really feel into it and see it clearly. Hey, you know. Your relationship with your son, the sort of the anger, the frustration, the inconvenience, God, what are we going to do? Is he not going to settle? Projection, anger. The underneath is the grief and sadness. And that's where the heart is. And like, what's that? It's like, oh, I'm having a human experience. Ah, my son is having a human experience. And I know my queen, oh, her anger is like, a fuck you to the world. Just let me have my human experience. And I know that grief for me is like you with your son. It's like when I soften into that, I could see clearly everything. I changed my work, changed my relationship. We moved home. We're unschooling our girls. Like the list goes on because it's like Fuck. I'm not just an angry bastard all the time every more. I'm able to shift to the softer parts and feel the grief of unlived, unexpressed, authentic truth and go, that sucks. And keep leaning in. Does that reflection back, does that make sense? You've definitely led this perfectly with perfect intuitive clarity, but does, when I reflect it back like that, like my mentor did for me a few years ago, does that make sense in your in the tapestry of your story?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that, like that sort of heart opening, as I kind of refer to it as, like, you mentioned it was kind of, it is kind of night and day, to where I was before and then, after. And, in some ways, externally, I'm in a worse position, as I'm currently having completely no security at all, like not knowing, am I gonna retain my job, my income? I don't know if I'm gonna be able to, all that kind of stuff, but I feel so much more comfortable. It's just like, I've been able to just let go of a big weight, and it's, and it's still intense being basically being a full-time dad at the moment, and still trying to figure out a few, a lot of logistical things, but it's just, yeah, I just feel so much more grounded and at home, and at home with my emotions too. And I think, like you say, with the sadness thing, there was a lot of that. I think especially initially was sort of just opening the door to suddenly the grief of realizing that I had been sort of disconnecting from my son in some ways, and just, but just kind of going into it, and in some ways it can be a beautiful thing too, right? To experience grief and sadness. It tends to be something that you sort of fear it, like, oh, I don't want to feel sad or whatever. But when you're actually fully in it, it's beautiful. It's just, it's just like the seasons, right? It's just something to be experienced. And it's essential for truly connecting, and that's, I feel like the journey I'm on at the moment, just feeling closer to, to my own truth, and then to my son, and just, just family in general. It just feels simpler.
That's the one of the juiciest spiritual words I've ever come across, is like the simplicity of just, it's simpler, it's simple. Tom, I'm smiling on the inside for just, we're coming into landing in a short while, but part of my work in this as a coach is, get a distinct to remind guys where they come from. The guy that entered and the guy now, man, it's just off the charts how far you've come. I'm like bowled over in such a short period of time, like from your courage and how you've leaned in, and you brought it. Like I said that to you in like in our work together at the end. It's like, you fucking brought it, man. You made me work for my daughters, and I love that. I really resonated with your approach. It was like, hey, if I'm going to fucking show up, I'm going to show up full flame. So that magic, how we could synergize together, but it's palpable to me. But every guy listening in, I mean, it's impossible not to be penetrated very deep by your calm, by that confidence, by that simplicity inside. It's really palpable. You had your version of like 3.5 months ago, 4 months ago. You reached out to me first, and hesitation, fear, part of your nervous system going, no fucking way, like don't do it, come back from the edge, Tom. But you found the courage, you made the call, and here you are on the podcast, a shining, humble light, embodying what is possible in an insanely short period of time. Tom, for guys that were in your position 3.5, 4 months ago, who are listening in. They're listening in regular. Tons of guys. Tons of guys. One of the most common things I hear from guys is, Mark, I've just been like listening in for a year, or it's been the last like 9 months ago. It was a really short time into listening to podcasts. I was having an idea to reach out, but it took me this long. What insights or what words of wisdom would you have for guys that are in that situation? They're leaning in, they'd love to reach out, but they have this part of their mind just going, no, it mightn't even be realized, but it's just, there's a handbrake up. If they were across the table in a cafe with you and you had a couple of minutes, what would you be saying to them?
I mean, I think it's natural, right, to have sort of resistance to anything when you know there's going to be some change, like you're going to have to put something on the line. Obviously, there's the financial part, but there's also, I think that's often just sort of a mental cover up for the actual, you know, maybe I'm actually going to be a different person by the end of this, right? So I'm sure everybody has these kind of, you know, whatever sort of rationalizations, reasons why not to do it. Some of which are also like, I guess it's healthy to have a certain amount of you're going to invest money and stuff like that. You want to understand that somebody's for real and all this kind of thing. And, you know, I think for me with you, it was, I think for me, the thing that attracted me to you from listening to your podcast was I could just sort of sense the sincerity in the way you spoke. I mean, I could also see from, you know, all of the content you put out, and there's so much value in all of it. Like, you know, there's so much good knowledge in there. But for me, I think the real thing was the sincerity. And there was always a doubt in the back of my mind, you know, there's always like, yeah, but is he, you know, what's he going to be like as a coach? Is he going to show up? Is he blah, 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 all this stuff. So that, you know, all I can say is that, you know, the mark that I was listening to on the podcast is, you know, exactly the mark that I got in the coaching and then some as well, because obviously, you know, there's a huge difference to listening to a podcast than to actually sitting, you know, one to one with someone in a room, and getting, you know, your full like focus and attention, which is pretty, I wanna really appreciate you for that. You know, like there's I've worked with a lot of done men's work and some different coaches and stuff like that, but I think the way that you show up like from day one has been completely impeccable, you know, on a level with I don't think anyone else that I've sort of worked with or learned from is how fucking present you are and how much you live you know, the stuff that you're teaching, and also in a way that you're humble as well, like, and you're vulnerable. You're not pretending like you've got everything figured out and you're all perfect. So that's what I would say to, you know, to anybody who's on the fence is, you know, mark's the real deal and go with your, you know, I think on some level you can feel if it's the right thing to do, it's the right step, and then just, yeah, try and tap into your heart and let the stories go for a minute and see where it takes you.
Yeah, and boy, that path for you is taking you to glorious places, Tom. It's I'm welled up with emotion now. Receiving your words there, I just want to say that, like, I fully receive with a full gift. I'm a regular dude. I say this. I'm a regular dude with a willingness to do a regular inner work. You're doing the same. The rest of the guys, you know, we're regular dudes. That's a core part of this movement. I'm like, I don't like this. I don't know, idealizing the guru or doing this type of stuff is like, no, the power in this movement is we're regular dudes. And when regular dudes individually and collectively show up with a willingness to do irregularly deep inner work, just fucking go there. Like you did with me. It's just, you just fucking went there. Messy, intense. I did the same. Miracles happen. And you're such a beautiful embodiment of that. And guys listening in can clearly feel the energy, that calm. And I know it's like, guys, the gauntlet to you is like, hey, there's not one of you listening in that doesn't want some of that, you know, that simplicity that Tom has spoken to and is embodying. You can feel it in his energy. So yeah, Tom, you're a fucking spiritual rock star. Everything that you embody, have embodied in my presence, is at the epicenter of the mantra of this movement. Is like, better husbands today, better world tomorrow, man. With you embodying what you're embodying continually as a way of life, for yourself, your queen, your son, and whatever else you're going to do in your life's purpose, that will be decided by your heart in due course. It's going to be of massive benefit, man. Thanks for coming into the coaching container, this work, but and a special thanks to you for having the courage again to come on here and share your story with the world. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for everything, man. Yeah, I really appreciate. I'm just trying to take as much, as much of this last 3 months with me as possible. But I feel like a lot of it's, yeah, it's in me now, which is, I guess that's, the biggest compliment I can pay to you is, it's more than. You're more than a teacher. You're a, I don't even know if there's a word for it, but
Dermot, you're a regular dude doing a regular deep inner work. No, I get it. It's in the unspoken, man. It's in the silence. Tom, brother, I love you, man. Looking forward when our paths cross again, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Likewise. Thanks, Mark.
Kingly brothers, hey, the gauntlet is set down there by Tom's example, and I can't restate it again and again. It's like a regular bloke, just like myself, just like yourself. That's the gauntlet. It literally takes, for Tom, it took what, it's like ultimately it's a minute of courage. You click the application call, you jump in the call, and hey, you just you put two fingers in front of your fears, your doubts, and you just take a chance. And you can see what Tom is embodying here, his level of freedom, following his heart, the simplicity that's bringing, and how he can show up as a much more effective and trustworthy and safe leader for his queen, for his beautiful son, and just that level of self-esteem and fulfillment that is bringing within himself. That is available to you, but only fucking if you take, you take your foot off the gas, you slow down and go, okay, I'm going to jump on the call. In every podcast description, there is the link. Take the minute, do yourself a favor, your queen a favor, your kids a favor, and the next seven generations after you a favor. Click the link, and who knows, 3 or 4 months' time, you'll be in Tom's seat now, inspiring other men, hundreds and thousands of men around the world, in perfect alignment with the Mantra Offer movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful, kingly day.